And I think for anybody that I work with, as long as we're like 80%, you know, we're not going to be 100%.
Sure.
You know, if we're 80%, that is fantastic. I mean, you guys are married too, right?
Yeah.
So I'm married. I don't even agree with my wife 80% of the time.
Pod BN.
Elections edition.
Here we go from the Play Normal Esports studio in Bloomington. This is Pod BN, election edition.
So hopefully everyone is enjoying these interviews with the council candidates. We're having a good time talking to them. And we're just hoping that it gives the listeners a little bit more a sense of who they are and what motivated them to run and what they're wanting to do on council.
Yeah, I think the point of these, the election edition, is just to get people a little bit more informed. So when they go vote this spring for the, you know, town council or the town of Normal or the city of Bloomington, they have a little bit more background to go on. So I hope we're doing a good job of that. We sit down today with Normal Town Council candidate Stan Nord. We're going to talk about him running April 2nd for one of three open seats on Normal Town Council. He gets very passionate about economic development and what the town of Normal can do to attract economic engines to the community.
3, 2, 1. Welcome to Pod BN. We are here with Stan Nord, candidate for Normal Town Council. Stan, welcome.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks for coming on. So start off, just let everybody know that may not be familiar with, what's your background? Where'd you come from? Where'd you grow up? Give us the whole lowdown.
Oh, well, I guess start at the beginning. I was born in Guadalajara, Mexico, then moved to Canada, then moved to Bloomington. My family is from Bloomington, so I didn't actually come to the States until I was probably 4. And grew up in Bloomington Normal, on a farm. So on the west side of town, you'll see like a big white Charolais cow, Nord Farms. That's me. And then there was quite a few doctors that were in town. We're all part of the same family. My father's Paul. He's one of the family physicians. And I was named after my grandfather. So grew up on the farm. Went to grade school here in town, Trinity Lutheran. And then went to Parkside. And then NCHS, the old NCHS, the one that's half standing up now on Adelaide, and then went to Illinois Wesleyan. After Wesleyan, moved up to Chicago for about 10 years and lived the uptown lifestyle up there, which was pretty cool. You know, it was nice. Didn't have a car, and then got married, wanted to have kids. Didn't want to raise my kids up in Chicago because it was mainly all pavement and wanted the lifestyle and, you know, what Bloomington Normal had to offer, you know, the good schools, just a very homey feel. Mm-hmm. So quit my job up there, and actually didn't quit right away, but I started a business down here while I was up there and then moved down here, and now here I am.
So how long have you been here consistently now?
So we moved back here probably 14 years ago.
Okay.
Yeah. Very so good.
What brought your parents to Mexico?
Schooling.
Okay. Interesting.
Is that Mexico and Canada with both schooling? Or?
Mexico was schooling. There's a big medical school down in Guadalajara. And then Canada was a residency program.
Okay.
And then we went to Peoria for a little bit of residency, and then here to Bloomington.
Is that where? Okay. That makes sense. Wow. I didn't know that about you at all.
No. So. So I grew up with a Mexican passport. And
yeah.
It's just the way it is.
So you've been here 14 years. When did you start thinking about a possibility of running for an office, whether it's town council or anything? When did you start paying attention?
Oh, I would say it was probably 2 years ago, 2 to 3 years ago. Okay. You know, I just had this assumption that the town was doing things right and spending our money wisely and that things were going in a good direction. You know, I loved this town, or I still love this town, this Bloomington and Normal. I mean, I grew up in both towns. I don't see the difference between the two. But then I started paying attention. I got more involved with different things I was doing with the government, by things with my business. And so you start paying attention more. And then you start talking with other business owners about different things, and you hear them gripe about how the town's doing things. So then you start paying attention more, and you start seeing what's going on. And then my kids are in Unit 5 schools. And some of the things that the town's doing, they're actually pulling money away from the school districts, which I'm very protective of because I'm a product of Unit 5. And it's like, you gotta be kidding. This is what we're doing. And then I attended, I was talking with people and we would, you know, start complaining and griping so much. I was like, you know, this is not good what I'm doing. I need to either stop talking about this stuff or get into a position where I can actually make a difference and make a change. So I decided to run for town council because there's only 7 votes. So rather than going out and talking to so many people, try to become one of the votes so that way I can actually make a change. And
that's great to do.
That was when I decided to run for council because it was the most direct way to actually get change.
That's great to take that step. There are a lot of people who just like to complain. and yeah, it's tough to put yourself out there. But I mean, if you really see some things that need to be different, then that's what you got to do, right?
Yeah, because I didn't want to be labeled as, hey, here's the guy that only complains, you know, and I mean, it's just not good for your health, you know, and stuff like that. And there are some good things that the town is doing, but I didn't want to be that guy. You know, if I'm going to do something, I'm going to do it right and actually make a difference.
Yeah. So we'll definitely have a chance to get more into that a little bit later. I'm curious, though, since you've lived all around different countries, different places, different, you know, urban, rural, what is it that draws you back here to Bloomington Normal, and what are the things that you really like about here?
Oh, well, my family's deeply rooted here. My great, great grandfather came here, and then maybe it was my great grandfather. But anyway, he came here, he started a farm, and then helped start one of the churches here in town. Then my grandfather is one of, you know, many kids. And he added on to the farm here. And most of his siblings were all male as well. And so there's more Nords there. And then my father is one of 9. And there's 8 boys, 1 girl. So I've got all these cousins, these deep family roots that are here.
Right.
And, oh, we've been so involved with the community ever since before I was even born. There's the McLean County Landfill. Well, our farm is around McLean County Landfill. The city used to have that years and years and years and years ago, and it was a rat-infested just mess. Mm-hmm. And having the farm right there, you know, and nobody wanting to go in and clean it up or anything, we just bought it from the city, and we ran it, and we made one of the first clean landfills.
Interesting.
So we've had it. We had it for years, and this was all before, like, this municipalities got into waste hauling and whatnot. We had waste hauling businesses here. And we actually had the first, what they call, like a clean landfill, where you actually put dirt over top of the trash, and then there's no rats that can get in it.
Okay.
So in 91, which is when I graduated high school with the landfill piece, we actually closed it. So we were one of the first people to actually successfully close landfill. Now that landfill is all capped, and we have pipes coming out of it, taking methane over to over to Purina down the way, and they're using it as part of their heating process for some of their manufacturing. Recycling. We started my uncle, but still part of the family, and I've worked for him too. We started recycling. So there was this whole recycling effort. Whenever that first came out, we had the recycling company in town. So we started, I worked over in Champaign at the time when we went over there and started setting up their whole recycling program over there for them. And this was back in the 90s, you know, so this is before recycling got big. So we've done this we've just always worked with the town, the Water Reclamation Department, which those are the people that take all of the waste and process all the waste. We've worked with them. We're right next door to them, so we gave them land, sold them land so that they could expand as the town was growing. And I don't know, we've been in medicine for so long. We've always just grown up helping people. Like when we would go to church or go to the movie theater, you know, my dad was with us. His pager would go off. He never sat through an entire church service or movie with us because his pager would go off. He'd have to get up, leave, and, you know, we may have to have somebody else come pick us up or something. And that's just the way that we were brought up, is you always may have to help somebody.
Yeah.
I don't know, I could go on with the different things that we've done. Whenever there's been ice storms that have come through and all the branches have fallen, we've taken all of the branches in and we let them dry, and then we get big, huge blowers and we'll burn it all. you know, we just do so many different things that we've helped, but more of them are all for kind of like the works department. For the hospital, we over on the west side of town, which is where most of my family is from and where I grew up, we saw my dad and his brother and grandfather, and brothers and grandfather, they saw so many people that did not make it to the east side of town to get medical attention that when they were able to, they donated land to the hospital to put up a medical facility to save lives, because distance means everything. So that's why the office is over there on Mitsubishi Motorway and Route 9.
Yeah.
That's kind of my history. And then growing up in this town, I know so many people here. You know, I grew up with these people. Some of the people that are in government now are people I grew up with. I didn't come back for a job. You know, I could work anywhere for what I used to do. I came back because I wanted my kids to be raised with the ethics and, you know, what this community has to offer, not for a job. I built a job so I could stay here.
Yeah.
But I came for the community, the people, and what Bloomington Normal has to offer. And that's my passion, is there's no job that's going to take me away from here. I came because of what Bloomington has to offer, and it really kills me to see how we're destroying our uptown Normal or our downtown Normal and making it into this manufactured copy of like an Oak Park or a Chicago suburb.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the thing that makes Normal unique is Normal. You know, once all that history and uniqueness is gone, what's our motto going to be? Come to Normal, we're just like Oak Park. You know, nobody's going to come visit that. Nobody's going to come visit old pictures on a wall where we show here's what Normal used to look like. They're just going to look on the internet and look at those pictures. So we're losing the essence of that. If you look at downtown Bloomington has done an amazing job. All these old buildings and structures are there, you know. So if you're into like looking at old towns, you can go to Bloomington and see all these old structures and things. That's something that attracts people. You know,
one of my favorite things, just to jump in real quick, one of my favorite things about to do is look at there's a Facebook group online that will post old pictures of downtown Bloomington.
Bloomington Normal History
One,
yeah.
And I love looking at the old ones of Bloomington because outside of the cars and the way people dress, it looks exactly the same.
It's amazing.
Maybe some signage, you know, but like the architectural, the buildings and those type of things, that's what's really cool to see.
And it's addictive. I've got into that and I've spent so much time looking at those pictures and reading about all these businesses that were there and things, and it's...
I've got this side project that I really want to do sometime. It's to get a map of Bloomington Normal, like, to see when the different parts of the town and the city were incorporated and built. And it's just kind of like, now that I have started to view the city structure, I'm on the planning commission, and now that I've started to kind of see like the way development occurs kind of in like chunks over the last 50 years, like I start to see now, like, you know, okay, well, this part is this core, this Bloomington core that's been around for, what, 150 years, something? I don't even know. But to see how that kind of like grew and morphed into what it is today, I've talked to Katie Simpson, the city planner, and I think all the pieces are there, like cluttered around her desk. But that history is fascinating to me, to see how we got from where we are then to where we are now.
And that history, I kind of lived through some of that. Like over on the east side of town, like all these new apartment or the, mm-hmm. all these new subdivisions. I remember when there were cornfields all around there, and you know, my buddies and I, we'd go over there and we'd hang out over there in the cornfields, and you know, on those side roads. And now,
so I've been here.
Now there's houses there.
2002. I've been here for 16 years now, even in that time, I've just seen how things that used to be fields are now built up, like over by State Farm on Washington, how there used to be just Krispy Kreme over there, right? And now there's that whole complex of stores.
Yeah.
And definitely Normal has changed a ton in that time, to your point. So
everything has gone east. There's been not much going west.
Yeah. They tried, though, right? I mean, I was just having this thought the other day about the outlet mall and the Walmart over there, along with all the now empty strip malls around Walmart. And, I mean, it seems like there was some development that was attempted out there with the Metro Zone and those types of mechanisms when Mitsubishi was out there. But
couldn't get across the entrance.
Yeah, it just never took off.
I mean, couldn't get across the interstate.
Yeah, I thought whenever Walmart came out that the West Side would start taking off, but, you know, it just didn't. You know, stuff just kept going. Yeah. Kept going east.
Yeah. I want to go back to the candidacy a little bit because that always fascinates me. How did the conversation go with family when you start, when you had in your head that, you know, I think I might step up, put my name on the ballot? How does that conversation happen, and what kind of support do you have?
Well, the conversation kind of went, I've never been outspoken. I'm kind of more introverted type of guy, never looking for the spotlight or anything. But my wife would hear me complain about things that the town was doing. And when I told her I was going to do this, she was like, wow, you know, I think you'd be great. And I talked with other people that have been on the council before, and they warned me. They said, make sure you talk with your wife and kids because it's going to take time away. And, you know, you don't get paid hardly anything for it, you know, for the amount of time you put in. So she was very supportive. I've since started kind of weaning my time down and kind of adjusting business-wise so I can have time to focus on this.
Sure.
And, man, she's been very supportive. And it's been fun because now that other people know that I'm running, they'll reach out to me and ask me questions. You know, hey, where do I go for this? What do I do for that? You know, and it's a town-related thing. And just to be able to find an answer for somebody, you know, I may not be getting them the answer that they want, but getting them the contact that they're looking for is fulfilling, you know, because I'm doing stuff that totally does not benefit or help me. You know, I'm trying to help some folks get a bus stop in their neighborhood.
Right.
You know, it's not my neighborhood. And it's just fun to go through that process and see if you can help somebody.
So outside of that, because I'm sure that that helps you prepare as well, but what other ways do you prepare for, you know, a future job on the council? Because as you alluded to, there's so much to learn and so much to know, and you never know where those questions are coming from constituents. So what kind of things have you done to prepare yourself?
I'm a quick learn, so sure. For things that I don't know, I know there's a lot that I don't know, but I'm not afraid to ask questions. There's a lot of experiences that I have that has helped push me to this and kind of helped me build my platform, like economic development. My business, I have chased economic development for 15 years. I mean, it's just the nature of my business. I never thought that that would help me in politics, but, you know, I'm looking at this for helping our town grow. And I see different pockets of economic development sprouting up in different areas, and you know, then I see how our town handles economic development, how our county handles economic development, and I've worked with other counties doing economic development. I mean, I started my business just here in Bloomington, and now I serve 12 states, eight different states in 12 different locations, and I've worked with economic development in different areas. I see how there's programs that are so fantastic, and they're bringing in different types of businesses. What it seems like, well, there's a lot of misconception as to what's advertised for how economic development works here in Bloomington Normal in McLean County versus how it actually works.
So tell us more about that. What makes an economic development program successful?
Well, economic development, first, you have to define what it is that you qualify as economic development. So you talk to some folks, they view economic development and progress as you've got all these restaurants you can go eat at, all these stores you can go buy stuff at, okay? That's one person's perception of economic development. Somebody else may look at economic development as, we've got all these jobs, all these businesses that are in this town. You know, we're growing, we've got manufacturing. That's one piece of economic development. You may have a school district that looks at economic development as, hey, we've got all these property taxes that are now coming in. You know, they may not be as concerned if the property tax is coming from a business or a house. You know, their view of economic development is different. Now, my view of economic development for this community, and every community is different, mind you, we are not a bedroom community. We're not like a suburb of Chicago. where you can simply have retail and no manufacturing or, you know, big business type jobs. Most people that live in Bloomington Normal work in Bloomington Normal. So our economic development is, we've got two pieces. We've got what you call these economic engine businesses. Okay, economic engine businesses, something that they all have in common is they hire local and they bring in money from outside the area. So like State Farm, they hire local, they bring in money from out of the area. Country, same sort of thing. Diamond Star, Mitsubishi Motor, Diamond Star, now Rivian, you know, they kind of do the same thing. They hire local, their money's coming in from out of the area. They do not really care about the pockets of our local population. Then you've got the schools, they bring in all these students and all this money from outside the area, and they hire local people. So these are true economic engine companies. The hospitals, those are economic engine companies. What they do is they hire people, they bring in money from out of the area. The other thing that they do is now there's all these other businesses, byproduct businesses, that have sprouted up to support like a Diamond Star. You get all the trucking, there's tube bending, there's seat manufacturers that have popped up because of that engine business. Then you've got all the people that work there. These people need stuff. These people need housing. So you've got the whole housing market that is now up because of this economic engine business. The people need food. So you've got grocery stores. They want restaurants. So you've got restaurants. They want a shop. So you've got shopping. They want entertainment. So you've got movie theaters. You've got all these other things that are popping up because of these economic engine businesses. So that's how I view economics. And whenever we use economic dollars to incentivize companies to come here, what I see the town of Normal doing is they're going after these businesses that are here to take advantage of the people that are here working. These businesses should be coming because it's profitable to be here, like a restaurant, Portillo's.
Just to clarify, by take advantage, you mean just like, not like exploit, but like...
Well, the reason that they want to be here is because it's profitable to be here, because they want to sell stuff to the people that are here.
Okay, yeah.
Okay, so like a Portillo's or any restaurant, they're going to look at it and say, all right, you know, how many mouths are there to feed? How many mouths can we actually get into our doors? Mm-hmm. Okay, so when Portillo's comes to the table and they say, hey, Normal, we want to open a Portillo's in your town, but it's not profitable for us to do it. Normal says, oh, well, it's not profitable. Well, whatever it's not profitable by, we're just going to give you the difference as an incentive. The same with the Dress Barn. You gotta be kidding. We're gonna give the Dress Barn money to come and open up shop here. So when these businesses lose their incentives, whenever those dry up, they've already told us before they open the door, it's not profitable to be here. They're gonna say, hey, it's no longer profitable for us to be here because this incentive has expired. So we're either gonna have to close our doors, let all these people go, or extend our incentive. I mean, that is flat out corporate welfare is what that is. And the town is picking and choosing businesses to come here. So they're choosing the winners. You know, even if, let's say Portillo's is your favorite restaurant, and these businesses are being used as pawns, so it's nothing against these businesses, but let's say Portillo's is your favorite restaurant. If they come in, are you going to now buy two meals? No, you're going to stop buying a meal at whatever restaurant you were going to before and now spend your money at Portillo's. There is no net economic benefit for the whole community when you look at it that way. What the town does is they drill down to the per parcel economic benefit. So if they can get more money out of that parcel than what was there before because they've put a Portillo's in, they say this is a gain. That's not a gain. You know, when you look at it from the whole town level, there's other restaurants that are now bringing in less sales tax. So
the contrast you're drawing from like supporting businesses to the engine businesses. So, Does it follow that there may be times when providing incentives for a business that is going to pull money in?
Yes. Brandt, for example.
Okay.
Brandt, this is a fantastic example of a company that we should incentivize. Brandt makes stuff. They hire local. And they sell way outside of our market. Everything that they nearly everything they sell is going to be outside of our area. We should want those folks to come in here. Mm-hmm. Those are the folks we should be spending our economic dollars to attract. There's only so many dollars we have to use to attract a business. We need to be smart about how we're doing it. You know, we don't have bottomless pockets. So Distill is another one. Those guys, they're hiring local, and most of what they make is being sold outside the area. I mean, they're bringing in so much revenue. I don't know if you guys travel, but if you go to like St. Louis and look at like Anheuser-Busch down there, mm-hmm. I mean, that is such a huge economic engine when you look at those buildings and all the product that they make there. And it is sold all over the place. Employees, you know, property taxes. And those are the businesses we want. But when the town of Normal is asked for economic incentives for these types of businesses, they're like, no, we don't want to do that because they don't bring in much sales tax revenue because they don't sell to our local economy. But they're missing the point that all the people that they're hiring and the property taxes, those people are buying the stuff.
So let me ask you a question you may or may not know the answer to, but why do we do it? Why does the town of Normal give incentives to those that are not economic engines, as you described them?
It's all based on your perspective of what economic development is. So we've got a county economic development, which Michael Grady, fantastic. He understands this stuff. Mm-hmm. The folks over at Wesleyan, they understand this stuff. But then they just talk to people. And they bring them in, and then when that business wants to go to Bloomington or Normal, they have to hand it off to Bloomington or Normal, and that's where stuff gets messed up, because Normal's view is retail sales tax dollars. That's what they want. If you're manufacturing and you're not bringing in retail sales tax dollars, it doesn't help them with their budget because they don't view it that way. And it's all perspective. If you're from a bedroom community, you know, like a suburb of Chicago, you know, where it's just retail and, you know, housing, you don't think about that people are driving outside of that town to go to work, and that's where that money's coming from.
Okay, so I haven't heard that term before, bedroom community. So by that you mean people live there but they don't work there?
Yes.
Okay.
Live there but don't work there.
Yeah. And then most people here in Bloomington are working where they're living. Okay.
Yeah, and it's just a matter of perspective. Mm-hmm. And, you know, whoever's on council or whoever's pushing for a particular program has that, may or may not have that view. But this whole Uptown Normal thing, this is something that started back in the 90s, okay? It came out in the 90s, which means they were planning it in the mid to early 90s, okay? That was before the internet. I mean, this was over 20 years ago. There was a completely different economy back then. State Farm was building all these new buildings. They were expanding. Diamond Star was pushing cars out every few minutes. I mean, we were growing. It was a completely different economy. So we had this money. We did not have any debt back then. Normal never had debt.
They used to brag about it.
Yes, we totally used to brag about it. And then they got this Uptown Normal plan that they wanted to build these buildings, okay, which was for an economy back then. And now, fast forward 20-some years, you know, the economy has changed. State Farm downsized. Diamond Star closed shop. We used to have a big vacuum manufacturer, Eureka Williams. They closed. They moved to Mexico because it was so much cheaper for labor. And we've got the economy's different. I mean, it truly is different. Mm-hmm. And we cannot, well, even consumer buying habits have changed. The internet is out now, so people are not going to brick and mortar anymore. They're buying on the internet. We are not going to change this pattern. So, like Darwin had said, which he's usually kind of misinterpreted, he did not say that the strong survive or the ones that were the most, I don't know, resistant to change survive. The ones that are the most adaptable to change are the ones that survive. And an economy is changing. The buying patterns for people are changing. That's why, you know, Sears is closing down. You know, all these businesses, because they didn't change to the new purchasing model. And that's what our town needs to do, is get away from this brick and mortar purchasing model and adapt and just adapt and accept that here's how people are buying and take advantage of those trends. We don't need a brick and mortar store here. We need that person that's selling on the internet and using this as a distribution center. I mean, it opens up your market to such a bigger place. And if you're a brick and mortar place and your focus is selling on the 70,000 people that are here in Bloomington or 50 in Normal, well, the second you go to the internet, Illinois now becomes your entire market and you're taxed based out of Bloomington Normal. So you just increased the potential sales tax base for Bloomington or Normal simply by going on the internet, you know, by many, many times, what are we, 5 million or something in Illinois? You know, whatever that number is, those are the people now that are the customers that are taxed out of Bloomington Normal. And if they sell something in another state, you know, great, because we still have the workers here that are working to box that stuff up, all the trucks that are coming in, the fuel that's coming in for all that. So there's a huge benefit. We need to accept the new buying patterns of people. Because just the other day, Beer Nuts announced that they were closing down their retail shop in the mall and shortening their hours at their store, and they said it was because of the internet and consumer buying trends. Yeah. You know, this is stuff that I think is obvious, and we're in a perfect place here in Bloomington Normal. We've got the interstates coming through here. We have rail going north, south, east, west. You know, I don't know if you guys know much about shipping, but even like flat rate shipping, there's the flat rate price, but then there's the regional price, which is less. And the reach that we have here in central Illinois is a much further reach than if you do regional shipping like straight out of New Jersey. I've got friends that are in New Jersey because we had started the business that I started here. He started the business up in Chicago the exact same time that I was doing mine. So it was really ironic that we started the same time. We both sold our first businesses the same time. And now he started another one up in New Jersey. So we've got this, I don't know, kinship or bond. And we always talk, but he buys stuff in bulk, packages it down, ships it out. There's another buddy of his that does the same thing that's been doing it for a lot longer. Bought a URL, $700,000, okay, for this URL. And all he does is buy stuff online and buys in bulk, packages it down, ships it out. $16 million in 3 years. I mean, those are the businesses we need. That's the buying habit of consumers. We've got at such a huge advantage being where we're at because our regional reach is so much further than if you're on one of the coasts. And you've got distributors that are just going outside of McLean County that are setting up shop. They're building these big, huge warehouses, Aldi's. They've got a big, huge distribution center just outside of town. InBev, the big beverage place that we lost. Mm-hmm. We didn't have the economic vision to see how beneficial that was, and we lost it. You know, but these are businesses that do not care about our local taxpayers' pockets. They hire us, and they bring in money from out of the area. That is economic development, and that is what I'm pushing for.
Okay. All right. Well, we're about at a halfway point, and we usually throw off a bunch of phrases and just ask you to say the first thing that pops to your head when we say these. You've been such a passionate speaker this first half that you've actually took a lot of my words away already, so I've been adjusting as we go, so that's okay. I'm going to say a word. Just say the first thing that comes to your mind. It doesn't have to be one word, but try to keep it less than four, and then if there's anything we need to expand on, we can do that in the second half.
Okay.
Let's start with nonpartisan elections.
Positive.
TIF.
Awful the way we use it.
Urban sprawl.
Needs to be reined in.
Connect transit.
Need to research.
Shops at College Hills?
Needs help.
Illinois State University?
Love them. All right. And Wesleyan.
All right.
So and Heartland, which I've actually attended all the colleges in town at some point.
There you go. Nice. So we'll take a quick break, and then we'll be back in just a couple of minutes after you hear from sponsors. Good time to recognize our sponsor, Play Normal Esports, located at 802 South El Dorado Road. Coming up on January 25th, they're going to have their Black Ops 4 meetup day, so make sure to check that out. You can find out more information on Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram, or visit their website at playnormalesports.com.
So, Stan, I've got your platform here in front of me, and the three things are lower taxes, restore economy, and do more. So I'm interested in hearing more about the first and second one and how they relate together. So when you're saying lower taxes, what are you thinking about, and then how can we do more with less from your perspective?
So first, lowering taxes. Taxes are determined by the town government deciding on what they want to do, figuring out how much money they need for it, and they say, this is how much we're going to take from everyone for it. So we need to look at what it is they're actually going to be doing. You know, how are they spending this money? Can it be spent more efficiently on things? If it can be spent more efficiently, then, you know, we can lower taxes. I mean, technology. If there's new technologies we can do to help us do more and it costs less. If we increase the number of people that are here, then that tax burden is now spread over a much larger group. So by bringing in businesses that are attracting more people, you know, now we've got more businesses, more property taxes, more people that are sharing in the tax burden, so we really can lower taxes. And not just giving away money frivolously where there's no net economic gain. I mean, we're in debt $100 million for the four blocks of Uptown, and there's no major business that has come in. I mean, actually, there's no business that has come in there. The only thing we have is the mall or the hotel that's there. You know, there's no major business that came in. With Uptown One, we spent, what, $11 million on Uptown One, and there's no business that came in there. The town rents that for $500,000. I mean, we're wasting all this money. And if we spend less, we can take less from the taxpayers. That's an easy way to lower taxes.
You've spoken a lot about Uptown. I just want to challenge a little bit, because there's a lot of people in the Town of Normal that go to vote that really love Uptown, right? They like going to the Sweet Corn Fest and some of the beer fests that they might have up there. So how would you have done it differently if you had been on council for the last 8 to 12 years?
Well, I think the fests and all the programs that we have up there are fantastic. This is not about the programs that we do up there. Those programs, many of those programs were going on long before these buildings were built. What I'm upset about whenever I hear Uptown are these structures that are being built. That's where all the money is being dumped into. The structures that were built, the town went out and spent taxpayer money to take these properties from people that owned them that were paying property taxes. So the town bought those. When the town bought them, there's no property taxes now being collected. So the schools are missing out for the past 20 years on property taxes being collected. Then these big buildings come up, and there's no new jobs coming in, no new long-term jobs coming in because these buildings are put up. You know, this is not economic development. This is taking taxpayer money to build structures.
So let's talk about the controversial issue going on right now, which is part of that the Farnsworth building or that what's
Trail East is what they call
it. Thank you. That's what I couldn't think of. So a lot of there's a mural. There's some people that really care about that mural that's on the side of the building. Some people just really want to save the older building, the historic building, whatever you want to call it. I've heard that's a controversial term now, is historic. But one of my thoughts is a lot of people don't pay attention to this stuff, right? Like, we're in this room right now talking. We're all kind of
ignorance is bliss.
Local geeks that like to pay attention to this stuff. But I think what people are going to the people that aren't paying attention now are going to start paying attention is when we start taking away the last part of surface parking that's in Uptown right now.
Yeah.
That's when people are that don't normally pay attention are going to notice. So
what's going to hurt the Discovery Museum? Because parents aren't going to drag their kids down from the parking garage all the way there. I mean, it's those cars, if you guys go in there, I mean, it's like a little racetrack going around there. I would be scared to have my kid walk out when I'm in the parking garage.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's just I do not think it's good.
So what part of that, I mean, what, the mural thing, like I don't, and I admittedly don't pay attention to Normal as well as I do Bloomington, so my ignorance is going to show there. But there was a mural painted there when another business owned it, and now some people are fighting to keep that mural there. It's not I just want to make sure that I'm right. It's not a historic mural. It hasn't been there for, you know, decades. It's been there for, what, maybe 10 years, maybe. But it is probably the most, I think I heard, most photographed spot in Uptown Normal.
So here is something interesting about that mural. All right, so aside from the building, that mural, in the election where the people that are up for re-election now, so the one in 2017, of the people that actually participated in the town council vote, okay, there were 2,472 ballots where somebody actually selected a town council member, okay? Now, there's a petition to save that mural. As of this morning when I came in, there were 3,976. So there's a full 1,600 more people that are more interested in saving that mural and those old buildings than there are interested in even voting in the election.
Yeah.
So what that tells me is that there's a lot of people that want to save that, but whenever the town council votes, the council votes unanimously against the will of the people. They vote unanimously for the corporate profits being kept, because this building, the company that the town found to build this building told them it's not profitable to build it. They told them that. So the town has said, okay, we will pay you the difference between what it is that you guys are going to lose so that we can get our building built. And the business that they have that they want to come in there is Farnsworth. Farnsworth, fantastic company. However, they are still in this community. So they're basically getting a brand new office that the taxpayers are paying a full third of to be built. There's luxury office, or there's luxury apartments going into that building, if it's going to match the same model as Uptown One. When I say luxury, they're $4,800 a month for a three-bedroom apartment that the taxpayers are paying a full third of. That's the equivalent of a $700,000 home that we have subsidized as taxpayers.
Don't we, at Uptown One, isn't there luxury apartments there that
still have never been vacant? Yeah. And that first floor in Uptown One has never been built out. So what the town has said is, we need this Farnsworth company to come in. Fine, let's just say that we need them to come in. Well, the solution that I see that would save the taxpayers $15 million by not giving it to the Trail East project is, for this food court that they really want so bad, move the food court into Uptown One. It's completely vacant. It was built out, and we were told it was going to be food. So it's vacant. Move the food court over there. But what, then the second floor that the town rents, the town renting is a short-term proposition. Government is a long-term deal. They need to move out of that, move into some permanently owned town space, which the town has, and they have space for, and let Farnsworth move into that space. I mean, that is the jewel of Uptown. That should be a commercial person that's in there that can take advantage of that. And let the town move out. I mean, the taxpayers would save. Farnsworth could be in there much, much sooner. And then it takes Uptown One from being a flop into a success that now you can go to a developer and say, look, we have made this work. Now, can you make it work on this property without us having to fund a full third of it?
Isn't there some controversy? Again, this my ignorance is going to show about how much the town is paying for rent in that space anyway. So,
oh, like, my land,
so,
yes.
So would Farnsworth be willing to pay what the town is paying currently for the same space?
Well, does it matter? I mean, the town built it, and they said that this was needed, and if the going rate that the town pays is too high, then how is this other building going to help? You know, if it's already too expensive to build this first building, the second building is going to be just as high. But the town needs to be out of that space. The town pays over $500,000 a year in rent, property taxes, maintenance. They pay a ton of money in that. So, you know, if we were to move out of that and let somebody else move into there, I mean, the taxpayers would save. We would not be giving $15 million of taxpayers' money to another building.
So if you win the election on April 2nd, and Uptown is where it's at today, so you can start making decisions as of today, what's your vision forward for Uptown?
The vision forward for Uptown?
Yeah, for you.
I think the vision needs to be a little bit away from Uptown for a while, because Normal is way more than just these four blocks of Uptown. We have neglected the rest of the community. We need to focus on bringing in these businesses so we've got revenues and people here to actually enjoy Uptown. Otherwise, we're going to build something and the people are all going to leave, because, I mean, let's face it, Illinois is losing 40,000 people 2 years ago, 45,000 people last year. You know, people are leaving the state. We are close to losing two representatives for the state because we've lost so many people.
So this is a question I always like to ask, especially with the way Normal is structured with their at-large system. If you were to get elected and you were the who are some people that are currently on Normal Council that you could see yourself working well with? Because, I mean, the reason why I like this question is because, of course, when you're running for any kind of position on a board like this, you're going to be critical of the job already done, because you're running because you usually want to see some change or something happen. So once elected, who are some people that you can see that you can align with and work together with?
Oh, I can work with everyone that's not up for re-election. And I will work fantastic with everyone that is not an incumbent that's going to be winning this next election.
Yeah.
Because Joel is coming in. I think Joel's fantastic. Yeah. And I've talked with him personally. I know I can work well with Joel. And, I mean, there's quite a few other people that I know I can work well with. There's the reason there are so many people running for this election, and this has been on the news, that there's eight people running for three seats. Mm-hmm. It's because there are so many people that are so upset with what that town council is doing to our town. That's why there's this huge interest in it.
So this is why I love local politics, because it's like when you get down to local issues,
we're very much on the same
page. It's so interesting to me how things align, because you can come from very different perspectives, but when it gets down to it, things like, do we give incentives to out-of-town companies to come in and build buildings that we don't have, that we know are not going to be profitable. It's like the...
That's corporate welfare. And Joel and I are on the same page.
Yeah,
that's interesting. And I think for anybody that I work with, as long as we're like 80%, you know, we're not going to be 100%.
Sure.
You know, if we're 80%, that is fantastic. I mean, you guys are married too, right?
Yeah.
So I'm married. I don't even agree with my wife 80% of the time. So, you know, if I can work with somebody on council that we're, you know, in agreement on these bigger issues, I think that's great. And I think that the town voters should be irate that if our town is this divided on some of these issues like Portillo's and Uptown, mm-hmm. the town council is voting unanimously on this. That means there's a whole segment of the constituent base that nobody's representing. Yeah. You know, and this council needs representation.
So another notable incentive program that was offered was Rivian, and I anticipate by what you're saying that you're probably more comfortable with how that went about. Like, it was linked to performance.
I think it's a good company to do an incentive package with. Some of the terms I don't think are good. Two of the terms that I think are awful. One, we're plowing their snow. We're paying to plow their snow. So just whenever we need our streets plowed, we've now committed our resources to go out and plow Rivian. So Rivian, from what I hear, is going to be a just-in-time inventory model just like Diamond Star was. Well, I used to plow snow out there for Diamond Star, so I have intimate knowledge of this. Plowing for people walking and forklifts going in and out of the building is a completely different type of plowing and maintenance than what you need for just cars going up and down the road. And we should not be paying for that. Because when the town pays for it, now we're dictating that that has to be done as prevailing wage. So we're taking the actual business that needs it out of the picture from making that decision for themselves. Mm-hmm. And the thing that scares me is, let's say that the company's up and running and they're making cars, it snows a whole lot, and the town cannot keep up on the snow and they have to stop production. Now it's the town's fault that they could not keep up with the snow. Are they going to now hit us because we did not do our obligation to do the snow and they have to shut the facility down? Mm-hmm. You know, we should not be doing that. Absolutely not.
Seems like an odd contractual term.
It is. And the mowing. We take care of the mowing too. You know, those are things that are just, we should not be doing that.
But as far as the incentive being structured of like, we'll give you the following things if you meet the following benchmarks, as opposed to, I mean, I guess two things. One, as opposed to just like a lump sum of money, like, please come here, here's money, like Portillo's, and then also it not being retail, right? Like, it is an engine where it is generating, ideally, I mean, if they're successful, money coming in from outside, bringing people into work here that shop and things like that. That meets those, at least those parts of it.
It does. I mean, you still have to look at the detail and see if they're giving more away than what you're actually going to get. Because remember, there has to be a net economic gain.
Yeah.
Because we've done the whole TIF issue that other communities have had in economic incentives is they've given away more than what they received, even if the place has been there for 15 years. They still never made their money back.
Yeah. It's so easy to, like you said, when you're sitting back and complaining, you know, sitting around having drinks with your friends, complaining about stuff, it's easy just to paint, like, you know, incentives bad, incentives good, let's argue. But it's, like, it's good to see, I like to hear your nuanced view of, like, there is a role, we just have to be very careful, and we have to measure, and we have to...
And there are places that are doing a fantastic job of it as well. Mm-hmm. You know, we've got Livingston County just north of us. They've got economic development programs for both their local folks. If you want to grow and expand your local business, they've got programs. If you're new and coming into the area, they have programs as well. What we do not have here is anything to grow local. If you're a successful business and you need to grow and expand, you are far better off to leave Bloomington Normal and expand there than to stay here. There are no programs. And this is out of the mouth of our town economic development. So you're big into Bloomington.
I am.
Something that I think Bloomington should do is one of those buildings downtown. Mm-hmm. You know, to get people in there, they should make one of those buildings, work with one of the colleges to make it like department of whatever.
Yeah.
On the first couple floors and on the top floors, make that like student housing, dormitories, because now you've got all that money coming in. You have to have money to go to college, and you'll have all these shops that open.
I like it.
Bus service. I mean, bus service doesn't cost anything. We're already busing people back and forth anyway.
I feel like it just needs to be halfway between Bloomington and Normal, because I lived in Normal. I was a student there from 2002 to 2006. And some of the things that they've done, I really like. Like, I really like that there's a new transfer, like a new train station, so much better than the old one. I wish that there was a way to go over the tracks. That'd be great, but I understand that. What was the other thing that was really good? I mean, I guess the circle is fine. Like, I wish that they just made it no cars, so it was just like a circle. But I grew
the green space is nice.
Yeah. I grew up in Europe, so I like downtowns where people don't walk, but I know that Midwest, that's a long way away. I guess I can buy the hotel because, you know, people come for conferences, parents come to visit and stuff like that.
Did you know that the hotel was under receivership?
No.
They do not make...
Yeah, so I mean, the market has said no on that. But again, like, if there's a market for a hotel there, it seems like the hotel should just be able to come and build it. If there's enough money for them to do that, yeah. I don't get why that's a city decision.
The city shouldn't be doing that.
I'm jealous of the town hall. When you compare Bloomington's to Normal, it's pretty night and day.
But Bloomington's is more convenient. If you need to go in there, you can park and get in there. If you need to go into Normal,
yeah,
you're talking at least 15 around. Minutes winding yeah. around. It's cumbersome. So if you're a builder and you need to get permits,
yeah,
I mean, it takes you an hour now to go get a stupid little permit.
Yeah,
they do jump around, though, in Bloomington because they're the government center versus city hall versus, like, I've seen people follow that path of, yeah. where am I going to go for this? For different permits and stuff.
I'm surprised how much they knocked down in Normal, though. Yeah. I think that it was
destroying our history.
I'm in that, like, I love the way Uptown, like kind of like what you said, honestly. Like, the circle and stuff, I think that they needed to do something. Like, I think Bloomington needs to do something. But now I think they've reached past the point of, like, they should have slowed down a long time
they
ago.
They need to do the quality of life things, like
that's what I said about Bloomington.
Like the green space, but when the government starts getting into commercial ventures and picking and choosing players, now they've gone too far.
Yeah.
They've gone too far. But well, like I live right now in Normal, but most of my economy is in Bloomington. I spend more money in Bloomington. I've got a business. I'm generating sales tax revenue in Bloomington. And I think there's a lot of people that live in Bloomington and work in Normal and vice versa. So whoever gets on town council, whether it's Bloomington or Normal, they need to realize that they really should represent all the taxpayers, not just the voters in their town, because right. you're a taxpayer in Normal, even though you live in Bloomington.
Yeah.
And you'd like someone to represent you.
What was so surprising to me was there used to be on that corner where the CVS is now. Again, I think it's great that there's a drugstore there, because when I lived in Waterson, it would have been really nice if I could just walk over and get some essentials without having to drive, because you can't keep your car anywhere near there. Students, like, you got to park way the heck away from it. So I love having a CVS there. But then it's like apartments on top of it. And so they knocked down these old, nice buildings. Movie Fan was there. Movie Fan had to move over across the street and then went out of business, which, I mean, all those stores went out of business. Yeah. I don't know if it was because of that, because it went out of business, but like, I didn't see any need to do as much destruction and then construction there to achieve that goal.
If it were profitable and the companies did it themselves, then, you know, I don't want to stand in the way of progress, but when the taxpayers are doing it and now we're supplementing.
Or if your town economic development coordinator wants to say, like, there does seem to be a need for a drugstore to come in here, let me go make this need aware, and then CVS can come in and do a cost-benefit analysis, and maybe they'll be attractive. Like, but then to say, like, they go the next step and say, we need to have a drugstore in here. And so we're going to knock this building out and make a drugstore. Who wants to be our drugstore? Like, it's like, it's in the right direction, but then it's just like a step too far, you know?
I agree.
All right, we're getting close to the end here, and I want to make sure we give you an opportunity, Stan, to let people know where they can find out more information about you. So is there a website, Facebook, anything that you want to plug real quick before we're done?
Yes, you can go to my website. It's nordfornormal.com. I also have a Facebook page, nordfornormal.com. Or feel free, call me, my cell, because I want to represent everyone and I want to be accessible, is 309-242-2495.
All right. Well, thank you very much. Like I said, we're just a small little podcast, so we always appreciate when people are willing to come on. I think that's all we got, though.
Yeah, thanks a lot for coming.
This was fun.
So So that was Stan Nord. That was my first time talking to him at length. He seems to really know his stuff. He was making a lot of sense.
Yeah, I tell you, he's not one that's you have to worry about him not doing the research on, right? Like when he finds a topic that he thinks he can add value to, he's going to make sure he knows the facts before he speaks up about it, which I can respect.
I wish I had a chance to ask him, but we ran out of time. The fact that he had worked with, like, as a partner with the city before being involved was an interesting type of community service to me. Typically, you think community service, you know, somebody is part of a nonprofit or somebody's part of a board or a commission. But he, through his professional life, was interacting. That gives him a very unique view of the what works and what doesn't work as far as what the town's doing.
Yeah, and I mean, from his family as a whole, I mean, so much of his family has been ingrained in Normal, of course, but Bloomington as well. I think he definitely comes with a unique perspective.
Yep. So we want to remember our sponsor, Play Normal Esports, and Normal Gadgets. Go ahead and check out the Play Normal Esports website to see all the stuff that they have going on. I was just talking to one of the guys who works here about Overwatch. I have never played it before, but he said something about it. There's a character you can play that's a hamster and a big ball that can knock down buildings, I believe. So there's all kinds of cool stuff going on with video games now that you can get over here. There's teams, there's tournaments that go on, team-based, individual, lots of stuff to do here.
And they have over 30 gaming PCs, 10 Xbox Ones, 10 PS4s, and Nintendo Switches. So there's something for everybody, almost every age, if you're into video games. It's a cool place to check out. Play Normal Esports. You can find them at PlayNormalEsports.com, Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram. They're located right on South El Dorado Road in Bloomington. Are we done?
We're done.
Let's wrap it up. He's going to run for the, three open seats, eight people running it for him in Normal. So we're going to take a look. We're going to talk about...
Try to say that again.
Yeah.